Hey, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness. My name is John Kutzmita, and every week I am joined by Brett Johnson, the man behind the dollar milkshake theory. Now, if you are unfamiliar with what that is, please visit our website at milkshakespod.com, and there's more information there. Also, if you are on our YouTube channel at milkshakespod, you will find a playlist at the top that says Start Here, and a few videos to help you go down the path of better understanding what the dollar milkshake theory is trying to explain and more clarity on the US dollar's role as the reserve currency. Now, we do talk a little bit about the dollar in this episode, but we focus more on some of the things that are going on geopolitically, specifically with Russia, and what if some of these events turn out to be true and there is further escalation with the military conflict in Ukraine, what that would mean for markets, not just in the near term, but if it really escalated and involved more of the U.S. directly and a full-scale war with NATO, how markets might respond, and Brent's ideas on the best defense for that type of situation. In addition, I present the question of what if we have a soft landing, or more specifically, what if the bear case is continually proven wrong and the Fed continues to raise ever so slightly while the market just keeps going on and markets keep going up. So with both of those questions proposed, I think we get a good coverage of the worst case, most horrific situation possible, which would be a war and how that would affect markets. While on the other side, more of a Goldilocks situation where if markets never really see the crash that everybody keeps calling for and just continually grind higher, and who the winners and losers of each of those situations might potentially be. So we welcome you along for another fun-filled episode of Milkshakes Markets Madness.
I drink your milkshake.
We are back in the second episode of the East Coast series of recordings where we're in the same time zone. It's actually feels a little trickier coordinating it because before at least I could stick it right at the start of my morning, but I got a microphone here now, my temporary abode here on the East Coast, and we're jumping in. Although we've got good volume on my microphone, it was a relatively quiet week.
Yeah, it was kind of a quiet week. It had the potential to be kind of exciting, but it ended up being kind of dull. We had Powell speaking to Congress. We had a couple economic releases that kind of didn't do a whole lot. The most exciting thing of the whole week is, kind of what's popped up this afternoon or this evening with, this issue in Russia and, what it is, I don't know, but it'll be interesting to see how this develops. And maybe it's nothing and maybe it's something, but I don't think it's nothing.
Yeah, earlier in the week, there was, there always feels like there's some kind of media headline or propaganda that's going on. I've kind of silenced out most of what comes in around the Russia-Ukraine story. But there was, I forget who exactly it was, some old white man in Congress who likes sending other people's kids to die, was talking about, if Russia did anything related to using their nuclear weapons or nuclear force, that it would justify involvement from NATO, which is basically saying, the U.S. would get involved. And so initially, I thought it kind of had some context around that. It's a slow week. Heading into the weekend, people were bored. And then I saw, the Wagner Group, which I might not have this perfect, but, is a hired mercenary group on the side of Putin, was making various types of threats and claims that they were under attack and therefore were going to kind of turn their attention to getting revenge before they continued fighting on the front line.
Yeah. And, I'm not, like I said, I'm the last person to say I know exactly what's going on. But you've kind of heard rumblings about this for a while. What I kind of find funny or interesting, or maybe it's just part of all the madness that we talk about all the time, is, when I was kind of looking at it on Twitter, and I tweeted something out. I said, this is brought to you by the R and the BRICS, right? You know, and people are like, oh, you just don't get it. This is a total psyop. And like, listen, I don't know, maybe it is a psyop, but maybe it's not, you know. But, you know, when TASS, which is the Russian news agency, is reporting on it, and locals are reporting on it, and they're showing military vehicles, you know, making maneuvers, and multiple sources saying something's going on, I don't think it's nothing. Now, is it a coup? You know, who knows? You know, it's it certainly has the potential to you know, really escalate into something more. And even if it is nothing, to your point with I think it was Lindsey Graham that made those comments. And, you know, Lindsey Graham is kind of like John McCain in that he's never met a war he didn't want to be a part of. You know, it's just it's insane to me that. It's hard for me to even get started without just getting really pissed off about it. But you know, it's a real issue though, because, you know, here's the thing is, if you have to try to not get too conspiratorial about this stuff, but the reality is every time there is a war, it's conspiracy stuff that kind of draws you into it and ends up causing the damn war in the first place, right? I mean, how many times has a false flag been the cause of a war? Right. Or something that, you know, turned out not to be completely factually true caused a bigger conflict. And so when you have someone like, you know, Lindsey Graham, who is a powerful representative of the United States government, saying if there's even a little radiation leak from one of the nuclear power plants in the region, that would be constituted as an act of aggression or whatever. I don't remember his exact wording, but. The problem is then, you know, it does draw more people into it, and it does draw NATO into it. And once those wheels get to turning, it's really hard to reverse them. And then you've got the Ukraine, right? Or Ukraine, I shouldn't say the Ukraine. That's a bad American habit. Ukraine, you know, they desperately need more American help. So it almost makes it in their interest to have a nuclear radiation leak, right? And so, again, with all of this stuff, you got to be careful not to jump to too many conclusions. But we're also in this world where you have to speculate a little bit in order to be ready for whatever is coming. I mean, John, you and I have talked many times that there are so many different things in the world right now that could cause a crisis of some kind that you have to kind of be open-minded and ready for anything. And so part of being open-minded and ready is listening to everything, watching everything, and not just immediately dismissing everything you see. It means you don't take everything you see as absolute canon, but it also means you don't just say, no, that's impossible, right? And so it kind of cracks me up when I see people that say or indicate that they know exactly what's going on in this situation. First of all, nobody knows exactly what's going on in this situation. Putin doesn't know, you know, the Wagner Group doesn't know. Biden certainly doesn't know, you know, you and I don't know, you know, there's two sides and then there's the truth that's somewhere in between. And, you know, it's, but it's the last thing we need right now is a bigger conflict in Ukraine.
Yeah. So look, we've learned, to listen to our audience, and, as much as they appreciate our ability to add variety to the conversation, they most appreciate when we focus on markets and our take on markets. So this isn't a sideball combo. I think it leads into the markets piece of what we wanted to talk about today. It was, like you're saying, when you have an event like this, you don't even necessarily need to believe. And even if you know it's false, we're just being hypothetical. Maybe you have some sort of sneaky on the front line insider info. The rest of market participants in the rest of the world is going to go off of the prevailing narrative. So it falls a little bit in line with not necessarily what you should or what you believe should happen or want to happen, but you have to take that objective view of potentially what is going to happen based on what is unfolding in front of us. So we're heading into the weekend. It's a Friday. We have this. You know, fog of war is a real thing. We've seen it go on for a year, but now we have this new event, new headline, potential psyop, whatever it is. Let's just extrapolate it from here, from the presumption. Let's say this escalates and NATO and the U.S. get involved in a no longer kind of this proxy war, but a full-on war with Russia. What do you think the market response, is this something that makes the gold and blue chip stocks and dollar all rise together? Do you think there's some other type of knee-jerk reaction that comes with that panic? What? How do you see this play out if this is something that actually transpires?
Well, it kind of depends on what it is and what transpires, right? Like if it's a small conflict over the weekend and on Monday, you know, Putin comes out and let's pretend for a second it is some kind of a conflict between the Wagner Group and the Russian Ministry of Defense. And if it's a small conflict and it's resolved by Monday morning, I don't think there's much impact at all. But if it's a real conflict and it takes a few weeks to resolve, or it takes a few days to resolve, you know, maybe you have a couple days of conflict. In that environment, I would expect gold to be higher. I would expect oil to be higher. I would expect stocks to be off. I would expect the dollar to be much higher in that scenario. But it might be temporary, and it might be, you know, just a short term pop, and then, you know, it's back to normal. But if it's some kind of an ongoing civil war in Russia, or if it somehow leads to an action that's taken that then draws NATO into it, then that's going to be more prolonged, and you could have a similar effect on markets that last year, like last year, right? If you remember when, you know, oil spiked and gold spiked and equities came under pressure, and, you know, I would expect a similar thing. Now, right now, that is not my expectation. I do not expect that we're going to wake up on Monday or Tuesday morning and Russia's going to be in a civil war and there's going to be a radiation leak in Ukraine and all of a sudden NATO is sending bombers over. You know, got to be ready for it, but that's not my expectation. But I will say, as I said at the end of the episode last week, I think markets are in a place where they're set up for a pullback. And, you know, I am positioned actually net short at the pump at the moment. You know, the market is now lower than where I kind of went net short, but not dramatically, maybe by 1% or something. But the momentum higher has at least paused for right now. So I think next week's going to be pretty interesting into quarter end. You know, my expectation is that with all the things that are already going on in the world without, you know, a potential issue in Ukraine or Russia, that equities are set for a pause and a pullback. And part of it is that we're coming into quarter end. There has to be a big rebalancing. As part of the rebalancing, stocks have to get sold in the rebalancing effort because equities have done so well, you know, year to date, and they have to get rebalanced because, you know, NASDAQ has dramatically outperformed the other indices. So that has an effect. We're in an area, we're in a time period now where buybacks by the corporates we're in a blackout period. So those buyers are not there right now. And we're going to have window dressing going into, you know, the end of the quarter. People, you know, whether you think it's real or not, you know, asset managers and advisors and money managers, they try to make their portfolios look a little bit different on the quarter end statement. And that always tends, or it doesn't necessarily mean something bad is going to happen, but it has the potential for change to be on there. And, you know, we talked last week how the put call ratio is totally opposite. It's again, it's not super, super bearish, but it's no longer excessively bullish like it was. Goldman put out a piece today that was basically saying everybody's long now. So, you know, the speculators are long, everybody's in. So, you know, there's a lot of things to say that this is just a natural time for a pullback. So then you put some kind of a potential geopolitical conflict on top of it, and you have the potential for, you know, a hard pullback. Again, my base case all year has been that we're going to have a pullback, but then that's a pullback that you buy. Because I think in the years ahead, U.S. equities are going to go much, much higher. And I think this move that the NASDAQ has had is, I kind of think it's legitimate, but I don't want to buy it here. I think you need to wait for a pullback to get in on it, because I think it has gotten stretched. Now, when we get the correction, depending on why the correction comes, how deep it is, what the factors are, and how the government responds to it, I might change my mind. But as of right now, my base case is that it's a pullback. You know, whether it's a 10% pullback or a 20% pullback, I don't know. I've kind of thought that we would go back and kind of revisit those lows from last fall. And if we get back in that area, I think that that is an area that you want to start accumulating equities. But again, you know, I don't know. And anybody who tells you they do know, you should run the other way because nobody knows. You know, and I know there's a lot of, I know when I say this is a pullback and it's probably one you buy, I know there's so many people out there saying, no, this is not the pullback that you buy. This is, you know, this is 1929. This is, they cannot have interest rates at these levels and have equities continue to go higher. I mean, this is going to be severe and we are going to have a 5-year depression. And listen, that is possible, but you don't know, right? Because a lot of people said this last September when equities were at their lows. They said it last a year ago in June when equities were at their low. They said it in 2020 when equities were at their low. And the fact is that equities are much closer to their all-time high than they are to, you know, having a 5-year depression. I don't know when that is going to change, and I don't know if that is going to change. And no, neither does anybody else. But, you know, I do have a framework and a path that at least gives me a guide on what to do and where to go. And then I can call an audible if I need to. But that's kind of how I see things right now.
These are not the droids that you're looking for. This is not the pullback that you should be buying into, says the perma bears. Leaning into the narrative of the war a little bit further, because you've already kind of had a defensive posture from just your overall macro view on things. Would you add to positions, or would you just happily benefit from the defensive stance you've already taken? If leaning into this narrative that, let's say, I'm not suggesting this for this conversation that it's Monday, but let's say it's a month or two from now where there's some real escalation, is there a different type of defense that you would put on in the event of a real war?
Yeah, I think then I would be much... If this were to turn into a real war, then the idea of buying the dip in equities is probably, at least being buying the dip quickly, is probably wrong, right? So again, it kind of depends on why we get the correction and how far it goes. If we get the correction due to dramatically increased military activity, you probably want to be in U.S. Treasuries. Now, you don't necessarily need to be in 30-year U.S. Treasuries, but you probably want to be in something, you know, much more of a traditional safe haven. You would certainly want to own gold in that environment, I think. But the worst thing to do, I mean, I've said this so many times, that when you get a little bit of a conflict and gold spikes and everybody rushes to buy it, and then a week later, calmer heads prevail and gold crashes. That's happened so many times. So the right thing to do is buy gold before the conflict. Buying gold the day the conflict breaks out typically does not work out very well. In fact, it hasn't worked out well for the last 20 years. Now, that's not to say that it won't. I mean, if on Monday there's increased military activity and you buy gold and then it becomes a war, then it's probably going to work out really well. But traditionally, buying gold on the initial spike of military activity does not typically work out very well. That said, it's funny. I've been planning to buy gold in July anyway. You know, we have some clients who have been dollar cost averaging into it. And, you know, typically in the summer, gold and, you know, precious metals tend to bottom at some point in the summer. And then they typically have a pretty decent third quarter. Now, there's no guarantee that that will happen this time, but, you know, the sentiment for silver, the sentiment in silver is really low. You know, I follow these sentiment indicators, and gold isn't as low as silver, but silver is almost at a washout level. So if silver takes a little bit lower over the next couple of weeks, that might be a good time to buy some silver and gold as well. Again, I'm planning to buy gold regardless of where the price is. But, you know, if we get a further dip in gold, you know, with the potential for military conflict down the road, I think that's a good thing to own. You know, I wouldn't necessarily sell equities here. You know, I I'm not 100% in equities to begin with. The equities that we have them hedged. And so if and when, you know, we get this pullback, I may not be as quick, or I'm sorry, if we get increased military activity that looks like it's turning into a further conflict, I may not be as quick to pull those hedges as I would be if it was just a garden variety pullback. So again, I think it's important to kind of have an idea of what you may do, but you know, you got to be flexible with your plans because, you know, things change very quickly.
Well, this week was just another perfect example of the 2022-3 theme of violently sideways. And, yeah, you know, silver, I think it Wednesday, maybe, if I have my days right, was down 3-4%. I mean, it was a big, you know, kick in the chin for silver, yet gold remained relatively steady. So there's, as you pointed out, maybe there's a bit of a washout there. Now, it feels like, despite violently sideways, and then this grind up higher in the NASDAQ with tech and AI kind of leading that push, over the last 2 years, it seems like the only one who hasn't made money is the bears and anyone in the mortgage industry. And I know that personally. So the interesting thing now for me when, you know, we started the show, just as a reminder for people, these were conversations we're having. We never intend, well, at least not right now, to turn this into any kind of whiteboard show. But this would be the type of, you know, off-the-cuff conversation or question I would throw at you, in that, you know, going forward, the narratives are all, I think, pretty clear. It doesn't mean that they will make sense from here, but we've talked before about this time last year, you had some of the highest inflation prints, so the year-over-year numbers are going to look really, really low. So inflation isn't necessarily coming down, but it's not accelerating at this horrific, you know, pace.
Yep.
So that gets into this whole, it feeds into the crash theme very, very well. But I was just thinking about it today. You know, the Volcker era was different in terms of the rate hikes. I mean, we had a very aggressive Fed over the last 9 months, but still back then it was even more so. And now that we've had a pause, I don't think this is really going to be a Volcker era type of redo. Now, what if the Fed just keeps pause 0.25%? What if we get a 750 basis point Fed funds rate and nothing breaks because it's just a slow grind? You have increased productivity, and I make the joke about the only people not making money, and specifically pointing to the real estate industry, because I don't see a lot of people standing in bread lines right now. And I understand, you know, inflation impacts people, and it doesn't correct overnight. You know, what you're paying for gas, what you're paying for food isn't suddenly, you know, down 40% from last year. But I think, you know, the employment sector, which everyone was just sitting around waiting to implode, hasn't shown any signs of that. And one thing I can say from a frontline perspective in the real estate industry is people aren't blinking an eye, and they are out there looking to buy a home like it's 2005. Does that mean we're closer to some kind of peak or the end of a housing bubble? I have no idea, but the sentiment is not anywhere close to what you hear on Twitter. And oftentimes it feels like we are in the biggest bubble, just having conversations on Twitter. So I'd like to hear what you think in terms of the potential that we just keep pushing rates higher, which makes real rates higher, which makes people's generating income on savings higher, and suddenly we've got a roaring economy.
Well, so again, my base case is that is not going to happen, but I can't rule it out, and so I would never bet 100% against it, right? But I'm actually very sympathetic to that idea, and part of it, you know, again, we're not going to make this about the dollar milkshake theory, but that has always been kind of my thesis, is that in the years, you know, for 5 years now, that on a relative basis, the U.S. just looks better than the rest of the world. I think the U.S. is the only place in the world where real rates are positive, right? And until we talked about this at the very beginning of the year, and I think we talked about it again kind of in, you know, March or April timeframe. The fact is that at some point, due to higher rates and just the business cycle, the U.S. economy will hit the wall and turn down. I don't know when that is, right? But at some point it will. But up until you hit the wall, the higher rates are actually stimulative. Because in the short term, the effects of the rate hikes are not hitting those who have already borrowed and are not having to refinance yet. But the people who own fixed income and have savings accounts are having more money deposited into their accounts on a monthly basis from either the government or whoever's paying them those higher rates. And so, you know, the U.S. government is putting a lot of new money into the system in the form of interest payments. And so, you know, this and there gets to be a little bit of, again, until you hit the wall, higher rates don't necessarily mean people won't borrow. In fact, it can actually encourage people to borrow so that you borrow before the rates are even higher, right? And I know people will say, oh, but you just, nobody will borrow money at these rates. I'm like, are you kidding? Do you know what credit card balances are? And do you know what the interest rate is on credit cards? You go look at a chart of Visa over the last 20 years and tell me that people won't borrow at higher rates, right? And loan sharking. You know what the VIG is on loan sharking? And that's an industry that's been around forever. So the idea that people won't borrow just because rates are higher is wrong, because money is a gift and good, which means the higher the price, the more desirable it is, because it's harder to get, right? And you need it. I guess you could say it's a luxury item, but it's also something that everybody needs. Everybody needs money, right? So if you need money and you are desperate for it, you will pay whatever you have to pay to get it, because the alternative is even worse. Now, this will eventually mean that we hit the wall. But until we do, you know, to your point, that the higher rates could actually be increasing the demand for housing in the short term, right? The trend for higher rates. Now, eventually it will price people out. There will start to be defaults and you will have the cascade back, and these will all be bad decisions or potentially bad decisions, but we might be there next week, and we might not be there till next year, you know? And the thing is, when you have the thing that you have to be very careful about is the bear case always sounds much smarter and more intelligent and well thought out than the bull case. And that is why the bear case is so intoxicating, because you see, wow, yeah, that makes a, oh, wow, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Oh, that's, yeah, that's obvious. But then the market just keeps going up, you know? And so the guy says, the guys that are the perma bulls that are laughing at the perma bears, they sort of have a point. Right? They're like, yeah, you can give me all these reasons, but the bottom line is the market keeps going higher. And at the end of the day, price is what matters. You know? Now, I think it was John Burbank of Passport Capital used to say price is a liar, and that price is not always correct. And that's absolutely true. Totally agree. If price was not a liar, there would be no arbitrage opportunities, and this investing business wouldn't exist to begin with. But you know, there's no pictures on a scoreboard, right? And I, even though I did not think that the NASDAQ was going to be up 30% or 35% in the first 6 months, I was wrong. And the people who said it was going to be, I tip my cap to them and say, well done. Now, I don't think that's going to last, but again, I don't know for sure. And so, you know, I think it's possible that we get a little bit of a pullback and then things move higher again into the fall. And so, so that bringing it back to housing, which is, I think, was the original question here, is this is a long way of saying that I'm not really sure. I don't know. I think this is here. I'm going to give you the bear case, which is going to sound really smart, right? But you know, you're going to start having higher rates. The rates just started being raised a year ago. Sometimes it takes anywhere from 12 to 18 months for the rate hikes to show up in the economy. We're just now hitting those periods now. In August, you know, student loan repayments have to start up again. You can give all these reasons why the second half of the year is going to be a disaster. But, you know, there was a lot of reasons last year that it was going to be a disaster. And the fact is, and I don't know if people realize this, the markets right now are almost at the exact same level. They're a little bit lower, but they're almost at the exact same level as when Powell first started raising rates. Think about that. I mean, he's raised rates 500% in 15 months, and equities are at the same level as when he started. He has a lot more room now than Bernanke had in 2008. So when we got into 2008 and Bernanke had to start cutting interest rates to counteract the global financial crisis, I think the Fed funds was around 3.5%, give or take a little bit. Now it's at 5.5%, right? I mean, so he doesn't have double, but he has almost double what Bernanke had. And so he has a lot of room to cushion whatever it is to come. And so there's just a lot of, and this is just markets, you know, as much homework as you can do, whatever insights you think you have, you always have to realize that they might not play out even though they make 100% sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think bringing up I was highlighting real estate only because it's the one area that I think you can kind of look at and see economically speaking, not necessarily markets and price, but economic activity. The volume of activity there is so low that anyone in the industry isn't making the money that they're used to making. But the rest of what we could call the real economy, it doesn't really seem to be, at least not yet. We understand the lag in raising rates, but yep. So it was really more of a devil's advocate question around the fact that the real economy has seemed to already kind of brushed it off. Now, you had mentioned Burbank. Burbank also said many, many years ago that, at least he proposed the question, why do we have to revert to the mean? And that one has always stuck in my head, you know, because reversion to the mean, it's like everyone's playbook. Like eventually this has to correct and go back.
Yeah.
And so it's a bit of that, you know, that bearish case intoxication where he pushes back again to saying, but why? And then, you know, we had a conversation with Hugh. It's an hour long. Hugh articulates in a very unique kind of way, but he also touched on the idea of reversion to the mean as somewhat of a non-believer, except in these like four pillars, right? And he mentioned treasuries in there and a few other things that because of their significance, reversion to the mean matters. But, you know, you go and pick a stock like Apple or maybe Cathie Wood's ARK ETF, reversion to the mean is more of an ironic phenomenon than a guarantee. So there's definitely some, yep. You know, things to think about there as we kind of go into this, who knows what's going to happen next phase of the summer where things are slower. There's a lot of questions around liquidity. I think we can talk about liquidity another time. You know, if you talk about the need for money and then you reference the idea of the bear case being intoxicating. And I was giggling the whole time because I just couldn't get the visualization out of my head of Chappelle doing Tyrone, the crackhead. He's like, hey, Joe Rogan, you got any more of those rocks? I'm just thinking, yeah. You know, like we could probably come up with a good one of him needing money. And so I think it's a good emphasis of where we are in terms of this could never happen. And now that suddenly we're here, Jerome Powell's at 550 basis points, we really need to start thinking about the things that people think can't happen, because the ones that they said 12 months ago couldn't happen are now here. Why not that next phase of, you know, this goes on longer and reversion to the mean isn't necessarily something we see unless there's a major catalyst like a war, which we've talked about earlier.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, now we're going to get into the summer, the deep part of the summer. And, you know, liquidity is typically a little lower. We've talked about that. But, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. It's typically Julys are kind of slow. Typically August is the most slow, but kind of mid-July to mid-August is usually really slow. And for whatever reason, I just don't think that's going to be the case this year. And maybe it's a hunch and maybe I want it to happen. I don't know. But I just, you know, I don't think we're going to have a slow, easy summer the way that often happens.
Well, everyone needs money, and we hope everyone listening is finding a way to make theirs. Brent, I see you got the beard going on, but I'm keeping a good pace ahead of yours.
It's actually pretty long. I don't know if it's ever been this long before. It's usually just a little bit of a stubble, but I've actually let it go for a while. So, yeah. I put on my black T-shirt today thinking that we would be twins. And then you're wearing, what is it, purple or pink? Like, the world has just, nothing makes sense anymore.
Nothing makes sense anymore. Exactly. No one's, you know, showing up the way you expected. Everyone's throwing you a curveball. And that's the way we like it. So on that note, guys, we appreciate you joining us. This is Milkshakes Markets Madness. The fine man across the screen for me with the beard growing in is Brent Johnson. My name is John Katsumita. You can find us also on Twitter. Brent is at Santiago AU Fund. I'm at John Katsumita. Find us on YouTube if you haven't already. Our handle is Milkshakes Pod. Leave a comment. Please subscribe if you haven't already. We appreciate all the interaction there. And any other questions you have, including those about the dollar milkshake theory, you can find more at our website at milkshakespod.com. Brent, any final last words?
None.
None. All right, there it is. Enjoy your weekend, guys, and hopefully we're all here in one piece on Monday. Take care. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.